Welcome to the Trend Detection Podcast, powered by Sensei, an industry leader in using AI to drive scalable and sustainable asset performance and reliability. For this three-part series, I'm joined by Rob Hienekamp, CEO at Endurance Solutions, to discuss the rise of equipment as a service as a concept and why it's set to make a big impact over the next few years. In the second episode of this series, we discuss why a cultural shift is required to embrace equipment as a service and why it's going to help manufacturers create better quality products. So let's dive into that a little bit. So I think you touched on this a little bit earlier about why uptake, let's say, of this technology has been slow. And it's obviously that, I mean, predictive maintenance itself has taken, like I say, it's just becoming, you know, a bit more mainstream. It's a lot more than it was even when I started at Sensei. But is there any other reasons what is holding manufacturers back? So it sounds like a great solution, great opportunities, but besides having a vision, is it like a cultural shift within an organization needs to happen? Different stakeholders need to be on board?
Yes, it will. It's changing everything, right? So when it's easy for us to say, well, just switch to EAS, right? But there's financial impact, right? Mm. Companies, they invoice based on delivery of a shipment of an asset, and then they get paid, and that's the end of it. So they have an income stream every time they sell an asset. That's a subscription base that could be 5-10 year contracts. So it's guaranteed revenue. But the problem is you have to figure out the first 2 or 3 years, right? Because you're not going to have that. So you need to figure out how do you do this and not cannibalize. We talked about it before, cannibalize your product center revenue. So it's a total shift in thinking. But what a lot of companies don't think about is the valuation of their business, right? So if you have an asset, let's say 100,000 assets in the world, and you just sell them every time when there's a customer asking for them, you sell them, great. And they hear nothing from the customer. Well, we know from software as a service that the valuation of businesses is tremendously much higher. Those multipliers are 10, 20, sometimes even higher, because you have long-running contracts, and support contracts and output-based contracts are long-running contracts. So the valuation of companies that move towards an EAS solution is much higher. One of the things that we're talking about to private equity firms is when you acquire a portfolio of manufacturers, they do, right? They have 5, 6, 10, whatever the number of assets, or portfolio members. They don't necessarily change them. They keep them the way they are, and they keep them product-centric. The conversation with private equity is this now. How about you have a portfolio of companies that are EAS specific? So you acquire a company, put them in your portfolio, let's say 200 million, and you turn them into an EAS based company. Generally, what happens with PEs, they spend 200 million and then they want a 5, 6, 10 multiplier, right? So they want to sell this for maybe a billion. How about you transform them in an EAS based operation? And that valuation suddenly goes way up. And the time to get there is shorter. So private equity is what take 5-7 years to actually return, make a return on the money. What I think we can do, and we know we can do, is shorten that period of time. Move your company into EAS type structure. Let's call it 3 years. Now you have, after 3 years, you have 5-10 year long contracts, which means the valuation of business goes so much higher. So what we basically advocate is private equity firms, move your companies, your portfolio companies into an EAS model, and your return is going to be 3 years instead of 7 years. So that's part of the conversation that we have in the market, with the market. But it's slow because people don't understand. They don't know what they don't know, right? And that's an important piece. If you don't know what can be done, you're not thinking about it and you think it's all great. I mean, how often do we have conversations with customers? I said it before, it works. Yeah, but does it, right? You could be so much better. And that's the conversation, that's where I think the problem is. We see also a change in generation, second generation owners, where dad started the business years ago. The kids take over, And they're asking questions. So where's the technology? Well, kind of need to figure that out. So I think it's partly that the manufacturer executives don't know what new technology can offer. And with the entrance of the younger generation, they understand what's possible. That's going to be more of an uptick. We can see a huge growth there. But in the meantime, we need to educate the market, because what we jointly have is so unique that people just don't understand it if you don't explain it very, very detailed.
Yeah, and again, it's having use cases as well, like for a new technology. I guess that's the challenge as well, or new offering. It's having the proof points as well. I mean, what I was interested mm-hmm. in digging in, because you've mentioned a few times about, and I completely get recurring revenue, the benefits of having a recurring revenue model. But you mentioned about these longer sort of contracts as well. Do you want to, why are those contracts so, you know, longer than, say, what normal contracts would be?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could do a 1-year contract, but subscription as a service is, that's not subscription, equipment as a service is more complicated, right? When you put a $2 million asset in, you don't want to, after a year, say, yeah, let's rip it out, right? It's more than that. You're basically going to impact your production capabilities, manufacturing capabilities. So we see customers asking for long-term contracts. It's a partnership, right? It's not necessarily we put an asset in the field and hope you call us when it breaks. No, it's going to be a partnership. And in fact, moving from a product type of company to more of a service-centric, you have a much stronger relationship, right? So first of all, service-based companies generate more revenue. That's one. Second of all, they have also a continuous communication point with the customer, because there's more interaction as a result. So there's a partnership. So when you're in more of an EAS type setting, you have a partnership because you both have a win, right? Right now, the manufacturer puts the asset in the field and they're kind of, okay, we got the revenue, fine. But they don't have an interest in continuing communication, because that asset could run for years, right? Who knows? So from more of a equipment as service, we see that there's more of a demand for longer term contracts and partnerships. Now, the other thing that we find to be intriguing is this. There's a lot of manufacturers out there that make all kinds of products, and they all compete in their own markets. EAS is not for companies that have a less than good quality product, right? Because it requires that when you go into market and your product dies every week or stops every week, this is not going to work for the manufacturer nor for the customer, because the manufacturer needs to go out every time, or the distributor or whatever, the service company needs to go out to basically fix the machine. And that's a problem, because now you have fixed contracts, performance-based guaranteed contracts. If your asset stops every week, what's the value? Because you're not going to make any money as a manufacturer, and your customer is going to be unhappy. So what's going to happen with moving to an EAS type setup? Equipment that serves is going to basically weed out the bad quality products, because they can't offer it. If you have a good quality product and it doesn't necessarily stop a whole lot, everybody is happy, because the one that actually manufactures the stuff, the output, they continue to get revenue and they continue to generate. And the OEM gets also the revenue, because it's output-based or whatever the contract is. So everybody's happy. So the better the quality, the better it is for everyone. So we see that once manufacturers move in the space, or if they don't want to move in the space, they may know more than the market knows, right? And so it's gonna result in better quality products for manufacturers, because if they move to EAS, they can make it financially work. But if you're not a manufacturer that has a good quality product, financially it won't make sense for you, because you're gonna lose money. So they don't want to take the risk and make that move.
Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking now. So it's interesting about how, you know, what you're saying about improving the quality of the product, because it's obviously something like Sensei, for example, continuously monitors machines. So they can actually see very quickly that those machines are starting to fail, I guess, as the software learns more and more about the behavior of that machine. So that's interesting what you're saying, is they can then focus on, actually another good use case of it is they can focus on products which are actually, you know, lasting longer and not having to repair as often and all that kind of thing. I thought that's quite an interesting point.
Yeah. So I think EAS is going to move the market to better quality products. That's a result of it. And it's kind of a selection criteria as well, right? So when you're in the market for a new asset, and it could be one of the questions, are you going to move or is there plans to go to EAS solution? And the answer is no, we're not. Why not? it's going to be a differentiator for the companies that can actually offer quality products to the market.
And in terms of, say, the Sensei endowance joint solution, I just wanted, we don't want to highlight them, but is there a big competitive element in the product, in the market? I guess there's anything similar, or are there companies doing a part of it, but not other parts, I guess? Just in, for a wider view, I guess, of the market in that space.
Yeah. So a lot of research was done, including several research companies. And it continues to come back. We cannot find any competition that does this. I mean, they do parts of it, right? So PDM solutions, there's quite a bit out in the market. And there's competition there. But when you look at a joint solution, nobody necessarily has the PDM output. And okay, what do you do now, right? What's the actionable item after that? How do I turn it into revenue, right? Because that's kind of what everybody is looking for. So there is nothing in the market that does what we do together. And after many conversations with the research companies, we were literally told, well, it's probably going to take 5 years if that for companies to catch up, because Sensei's product is complicated, right? It's not as easy. You can't just develop it overnight. It takes time. What we've built is complicated. And we basically put together all the processes from monitoring an asset, bringing it into the Sensei solution. Sensei does the analytics piece of it, learns about it, AI, machine learning. Then we pick it up. That whole pickup piece is something that's been custom built. It took us about 3 years to get there. Then it feeds it into a CRM, let's say use a Salesforce. That requires development on the Salesforce side, managed packages. Then you need to integrate it to an ERP process, because that's where orders are being processed, that's where shipping's being handled. They need to associate that to a field service solution that may or may not be in the ERP or the CRM. So suddenly you have all these different components that make up the joint solution. And developing those individual types of assets, applications, whatever you want to call it, is going to take time. And so goes back to the partnership question before. What's the partnership? What does it do? And how can it work? And the answer is, if you don't partner, you won't get this type of solution, because Sensei is not going to be able to do what we do, and we're not going to be able to do what Sensei does. So that's where Gartner saw a tremendous synergy between our organizations, and it turned out to be accurate.
And then I guess it builds out from there, whether through official partnerships or a joint product offering. But obviously you mentioned systems like CRM, ERP all play a role in this process. So, I mean, so what are the sort of benefits, I guess, the ultimate benefits of integrating all of that together?
Yeah, well, you can turn it around. If you don't have it, there's no value. well, let me ask your question. What you find on the highest level is, basically, if you look at it, we're monitoring stuff, right? We're capturing information in our joint solution. Then we analyze the information. Then we act on it. What's missing in all of the other solutions is the act. So in order to act on an asset starting to fail, it all needs to be integrated, because all applications have their own specifics. Sensei captures the information, analyzes it, and does all the analytics on it. But you don't have an ERP that does that, or you don't have a CRM that does that. So there's specific functionality for each of those apps. So When the information is captured by Sensei, it feeds into our AWS-based solution. And then it feeds in, let's use Salesforce since it's the biggest. Salesforce has a sales component and a service component. And so in order for that to make actionable, we need to notify some folks, right? People need to be notified and we need to, there's an action required. The piece after capturing the information is something that doesn't happen with any solution right now other than our joint solution. So in order to make it work with a sales organization, service organization, we need to integrate to a service and a sales app, Salesforce, whatever. I mean, it's not, there's apps out there that can do very connected. And then to any of the ERPs. The ERPs, they do have functions that don't belong in an ERP, in a CRM. Order management, shipping, all those ERP types, backend processes, they just can't be anywhere else. So that's why you need to integrate. So that's why we have four different applications as part of our joint solution that need to be integrated, right? So if you don't integrate these apps, then you're not going to be successful because then the benefit's going to be gone. Not integrating means that it's going to be manual labor. So if the customer doesn't want to integrate any of these solutions, the answer is then you gotta, well, we can't work with you. And integration is going to be a critical component to the future. I mean, we talked about the industry 4.0. We talked about digital transformation. The definition of digital transformation to me is very intriguing. We talked to 20 different people. You hear 30 different stories about what digital transformation is. Digital transformation could be as simple as we're going to go from Excel to an ERP, okay? Or we're going to from paperwork to Excel, right? It's like, and then of course, you have the way further advanced companies that actually understand what digital transformation is. It's not just application that you change. It's a process. It's an organizational change. Digital transformation is not departmental or unique to a specific piece of the business. When you sign up for digital transformation, you sign up for it as a business. And it has to be boardroom type conversation where you mandate that as a company. You can't just arbitrarily decide, we're going to digital transform my operation. There's a lot more to it. And so it feeds into industry 4.0, digital transformation. And I think what we offer to the market is maybe the industry 5.0. When I talk to some industry companies, they're like, yeah, we're hardly in the industry 4.0. But what we seem to offer is beyond what 4.0 has meant to do. So I don't know. Did we just reinvent industry 5.0, Niall? I don't know. We need to have this conversation.
Well, I've told this story probably before on this podcast, but when I was at an event last year and there was a presentation earlier in one of the, conference earlier in the day where they were saying about industry 4.0 and, you know, people still haven't fully embraced it, da, 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 da. And they were sort of downplaying, let's not jump to industry 5.0 because, we haven't even mastered industry 4.0. And then later, there was a session later on in the day about industry 5.0. So I thought that was quite ironic, actually, that they were disparaging it in one session. And then another one was like, oh, yeah, it's just around the corner.
But it's true, right? I mean, I don't know if so when we talk to customers, a lot of times they don't even understand what industry 4.0 is, right? Let alone 5.0. What 5.0 is, we have no idea. But if we talk to the market and industries and the market, the research companies, they don't think this is 4.0. It's beyond. But what's beyond? And I don't know the definition. So maybe we're going to redefine industry 5.0 together without knowing it.
Industry 4.5, maybe, or I don't know. Industry 4.75.
And then figure out. And then figure out what 5.0 is, and then start defining it. So, but it's intriguing because there's a lot of talk about that, and a lot of people don't even understand what it is. And I think that's where our challenge is too, right? We have a product that goes so far beyond people's imagination that they can't even comprehend when you talk about it on the highest level. So that's our challenge. Not even industry 4.0 is a well-known term across the industry executives. let alone what we do. I mean, there's no real term for it. Servitization doesn't do justice, because servitization to me is not what we do. We have gone beyond that. So when in 2017 I read a document about servitization, and what happened is that the definition of, so what's aftermarket parts and service? What is that? And companies needed to baseline that on 25% of their revenue. So when you do $100 million revenue a year, let's use that number, $25 million should come from aftermarket parts and service. In other words, people call you because something is breaking or broke. Now you need to figure it out and send a person out and send a ship apart and all that. There was an initial conversation. Well, 25% is the baseline per the industry, but most companies don't even touch the 10%. So they leave 15%, let's say 15% on the table. On a $100 million company, that's a lot of cups of coffee, And so that's where we started with Duet 360 for IoT. And so we started building out our solution, and we're trying to figure out how we connect to assets and all that. And then our friend Gartner came around and they said, well, hold on, there's a solution that does that. So now suddenly with bringing in the PDM solution from Sensei, we now have a predictive capability that feeds into our process. And so it morphed from more of a servitization type solution into a full-fledged predictive capability, predictive maintenance, not predictive maintenance, doesn't do justice, predictive solution. And the definition of what we do together is defined as, let me do this right, it's a flawless supply chain of parts. That's what it was called by some of the industry analysts. And it's accurate, right? Because you're going to prevent failure of an asset by making sure that the asset supply chain is there in time, and it gets delivered, the part gets delivered in time, the service gets done in time before it breaks. So it's a perfect definition, I think, flawless supply chain of parts.
Well, I think you've come up with the tagline for the I like that, or got that. That's a really nice way to put it, actually. I was going to ask, actually.
It addresses you.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Go ahead.
So that was the second part of our series looking at the rise of equipment as a service. I hope you enjoyed it. Please subscribe via your favourite podcast provider if you'd like to be notified about future series, and let us know your feedback by leaving us a review. You can find out more about how Sensei can reduce unplanned downtime and contribute towards improved sustainability within your manufacturing plants by visiting sensei.io. Thanks a lot for listening.